Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good middle of the night, and welcome back to Cases of Color. I am your host, Randy Baum, and I'm here to bring you another episode of Cases of Color. Before we get started, I want to say, you guys, I am extremely sorry that I'm late. This whole coronavirus thing has been really nuts. I don't want to say what my profession is, but it does in some ways affect my job. And it just really put a strain on me during the week to be able to properly sit down and edit this episode. So I'm very, very sorry for that. Nevertheless, next week's episode will be on Thursday like clockwork. I really wanted to talk about this case because it's a very recent case. Kind of caused me to do some reflection and some thought about the law and injustice in itself and kind of how we view justice, and is our justice system really working for us in the first place? Before we get into any of that, make sure you follow Cases of Color at Cases of Color on Instagram and Twitter. If you're not following me, what are you doing? You're missing out on updates. You're missing out on whenever something's going to be late or anytime I post anything. Also, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or SoundCloud, please be sure to subscribe, and also please leave a rating on Apple. I really do appreciate it. It kind of helps boost me up there and get the visibility out there. If you like what you're hearing, please leave me an honest, nice comment. I would really, really love to hear it. And thank you so much. Recently, I gave an opportunity for people to give me some critique on the episodes, and I really liked what you guys had to say. This is not going to be a super long episode. However, every episode after this will be a long episode. So thank you guys for that feedback. Also, I'm not going to do an intro anymore, but I am going to do an outro. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. And additionally, just thank you for the honest critiques and letting me know how you felt. I really appreciate it. Another thing that I'm going to start doing are some bonus episodes just on cases or stories that might not have as much information as other cases and things like that. So just look forward to all of those changes coming up in the coming weeks, especially the bonus episodes. And I do want to start giving an honorable mention. If you guys have people in your town that are missing, that have been murdered, and there's still really no answers, but unfortunately, there's not enough information for me to do a full episode, please send those to me on Twitter at Cases of Color or on Instagram at Cases of Color. You can DM them to me. You can leave them in the comments, because I want to start doing an honorable mentions section about missing people, murdered people, and we haven't come to a resolution or figured out what's going on. Please and thanks. Okay. All right. Let's get into this episode. So this week's episode is about Nathaniel Woods. Now, if you have been living under a rock, Nathaniel Woods' case really caught a lot of traction because on 5 March, he was actually executed for being an accomplice to the murder of 3 police officers. That day in 2004, for which he was convicted of murder and be given the death penalty, is known as one of the bloodiest days in Birmingham, Alabama police history to date, and is still listed as that. And that is what Nathaniel Woods was involved in. The reason why his case got a lot of traction and a lot of attention is because a lot of people felt like he should not have been executed. And that is what we are going to talk about and unpack today. What happened, what people's thoughts are about him being executed, my own personal thoughts on the death penalty, because even I am conflicted about the death penalty itself, not necessarily this case. And also, some people did not understand how he could be an accomplice and get the death penalty. So I'm actually going to break that down as well, just so we can get to some understanding and maybe just kind of discuss the different things our justice system does that don't necessarily work in the advantage or aren't really right. So let's get into it. Nathaniel Woods was 43 years old when he was executed. Woods did not have the best past. He was known for selling crack cocaine to what was predicted to be 100 to 150 customers per day. He was wanted for domestic assault, and that's actually what led those police officers to his home on that day. Very long story short, the police officers showed up to arrest him. They had a warrant for his arrest for domestic assault. Woods allegedly was talking to them through a back door. He went to open the back door to let the police officers in to discuss it. At that time, a man named Kerry Spencer opened fire with a high-powered rifle. He killed 3 officers, Carlos Owen, Harley A. Chisholm III, and Charles R. Bennett. They died from multiple gunshot wounds from being shot with a high-powered rifle. Again, Kerry Spencer was the gunman. Nathaniel Woods was there. It was his apartment. Kerry Spencer was in his apartment. However, Nathaniel Woods did not pull a gun out and shoot anyone. By all accounts, he was actually surrendering at the time. So Woods was put on trial in 2005, which is the following year after what happened. The prosecution said that he was bait, that he lured the officers into the apartment. They said that he bragged about the murders because there were some song lyrics and some pictures found in Woods' cell. One of the pictures was of a bullet-riddled police car. There was also some lyrics that he wrote down. It said, "I kill pigs like Kerry Spencer." You know, not the greatest things to be found as far as the circumstances. But Woods said that he had told the officers that he was surrendering. And it was after they entered the apartment that Kerry Spencer opened fire with the high-powered rifle. Okay, Spencer, the gunman, is also on death row right now. He confessed to the killing. He even said flat out, like, Woods had no idea what was going to happen, that he was not aware of the killing that was going to go on. But a jury failed to reach a verdict in this case. So what happened is the jury was 10-2 for the death penalty. They could not come to a unanimous verdict. So it was actually the judge who sentenced him to death. So how it works in the state of Alabama is there is a law called the Accomplice Act. It's under law code 13A-2-23. It reads as follows. A person is legally accountable for the behavior of another person if he or she procures, induces, or causes such other person to commit the offense. A person can also be charged under the law if he or she aids or abets another person in committing a crime or fails to present a crime while having ability to do so. Most states do have some form of the accomplice law from the research I've done. The law can honestly be used for any crime. It's mostly used when it comes to fatal shootings and anything that ends up in a death that is fatal. So the Supreme Court also has their thoughts on the laws. They've set two standards by which states tend to subscribe to in the case of fatal shootings. Some states require proof of an accomplice's intent to kill, also known as the Enman standard. It was set in 1982 when the Supreme Court ruled that Earl Enman, a getaway driver in a fatal robbery, could not be sentenced to death because he did not kill, attempt to kill, or intend that a killing take place. Eight states, including Alabama, only require an element of reckless disregard for human life, known as the Tyson standard. In 1987, the Supreme Court upheld the death penalty for two brothers whose father escaped from prison, then killed a family whose car they took. The brothers were present at the time of the slaying. Both the father and a third brother were killed in the manhunt for them. The court acknowledged that neither brother intended for the family to be killed, but that they played a major role in the prison break and carjacking. So if the defendant displayed reckless disregard for human life in the course of a felony, the court said then the death penalty was proportionate, even when there was not a clear intent to kill. So I hope that makes sense. If not, let me break it down. What they're basically saying is there's two standards for this. Okay, there's one standard, which is where you can acknowledge the fact that they didn't intend to kill, attempt to kill, or intend for a killing to take place. In states like Alabama, only one of those things has to be true. They don't care about any of the other thing. So they didn't care about the fact that Woods was there, even though the gunman is literally saying that he didn't intend to kill him, nor know that that is what he was going to do, i.e. when I say he, I mean Kerry Spencer. The court was very big on portraying Nate Woods as somebody who hated the police, as somebody who showed no regard for life whatsoever. That was the angle that they took. So very long story short, Woods' attorney argued that there was no evidence showing that Woods had plotted to ambush the officers and things of that nature. However, the prosecutor's angle was that he did intend to kill him and that he purposely led them into the apartment knowing that Kerry Spencer was going to shoot them. They basically used his drug selling background as a motive for not wanting to be taken in, not wanting to have the police officers in the home, and by their accounts, because again, the police officers are dead at this point, that them coming in the house could have led to them discovering the drugs, i.e., let's just kill them. Granted, that's not a really great plan because you still just killed three police officers and injured one who luckily survived. But that was their angle. That's what they were going at. That's their thought process. So what happened on March 5th is an attorney for Woods filed a second petition to the high court, again, asking for a stay of execution and a review of the case. Alabama is the only state that allows a defendant to be condemned without a unanimous jury decision in a capital punishment case. So again, that's why the judge sentenced him to death, because Alabama is the only state in America where if you don't reach a unanimous decision, the judge can just make the decision for them and forego the fact that there's a whole jury of 12 people who are supposed to make this decision. When I found that out, it really irritated me because I don't like that. That the whole purpose of a jury is that the jury, non-biased, objective. If they couldn't come to the decision of death, this man shouldn't have been put to death. That's just my opinion. So at one point, there was a report that came out on the 5th that there was a stay of execution. On that day, Woods was able to meet with his daughter. He was able to meet with his sister, his mother, and I believe his grandmother as well on that day. It was a Thursday. He found out he had a stay of execution, and I would assume he was very happy. He was very excited because, like, okay, they're going to re-review this case, going to look at everything. Governor Ivey decided and said in a statement that after review of a very long caseload, that she agrees with him being put to death. And then just like that, the stay of execution was lifted. At 9:01 p.m. Central Standard Time, following a lethal injection, Nathaniel Woods was ultimately put to death. He had no last words. He appeared to arrange his hand in a sign of his Islamic faith. At around 8:45, he was shown with his eyes closed, his arm began to jerk, and he no longer responded to any of the consciousness tests. And according to reports, he ordered his last meal because it was very last minute, and he only was able to take one bite before they came to get him to put him to death. The family members of the slain officers gave statements to the media after the execution. I'm going to read these. We are going to discuss them. So it just before anybody gets up in arms, I want to cover the full story. But Greg Owen, the son of Officer Owen, said that his father was also a grandfather who only wanted to protect people in the city where he grew up. Instead of going home that day, he was ambushed, murdered, and died on the floor of a filthy drug house. Our loved ones took their last breath while upholding the law to make Birmingham a safer place. Our families will not have closure until Kerry Spencer's execution date. May God have mercy on their souls. Until then, may our loved ones rest in peace. The families are clearly upset, and I'm going to say this. Take what we're discussing about out of the picture. We cannot ignore the fact that three people, one person injured, died viciously on that day. I cannot imagine being shot multiple times with a high-powered rifle. I couldn't imagine just doing a normal serving of a warrant and taking my last breath brutally. Because being shot multiple times with a high-powered rifle is not a good way to die. And this is not a discussion on whether you like the police or not. I'm not going to lie, the police are not my favorite people either, for personal reasons, for things that I've encountered in my life. That doesn't take away from the fact that I understand why these families are so upset. Like, I get that for them, the discussion of, well, he didn't pull the trigger is not good enough. And I think for most of us, whether our family member was a police officer or not, if it was us, that probably would not be a good enough explanation either. And again, if for you it is, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm just speaking for me. I know if it was me, if it was my husband, one of my children, one of my family members, I really wouldn't give two damns about who did what. All I know is you were there and you're the whole reason they had to be there. And for me, that's enough. Because sometimes that's how grief works. That's how pain works. And that's how tragedy works. So I think we need to be respectful of these families and their comments, because they are allowed to have them. And I've seen some people attack the family about it. And I need y'all to realize the family ain't looking at it the way the rest of us are looking at it. The family are not looking at it as fair and equitable, or unfair and inequitable. They're just seeking justice for their loved ones who they lost, their loved ones who would not have been there if it wasn't for that warrant. So just be understanding of that, because a lot of the attacks or the very cruel things have been said about the family members of these lost, you know, these people who have lost their loved ones is honestly very harsh. And I think you just need to think, if it was my dad or my grandfather or my uncle or my brother who died this way viciously just doing their job, how would I feel? So that's just my two pennies on that. You know, I want to go to the Democratic representative, John Rogers, who's from Birmingham. He said that he did not have a problem with capital punishment for those who pulled the trigger. But he said Woods did not fit that bill. He did not kill one officer. He was a drug addict in the wrong place at the wrong time. This is the part I really want to get into. My personal thoughts on the death penalty is I struggle with it. Because after knowing about the Innocence Project and knowing about things of that nature, I know that there are a lot of people on death row, specifically Black men and men of color on death row, who were wrongfully convicted, who were overly punished for their crimes. For example, they just executed Nathaniel Woods, the white supremacist who did the bombing of the church in Birmingham, killed those four young Black girls in that church basement. He's still alive. He's still sitting in prison. So I say all of that to say, it's things like this that make me question the death penalty, and it makes me question how human life is regarded. Because when it's four little Black girls, it's cool, you can just sit in prison. When it's three to four police officers, it's lethal injection. And I also don't understand how the gunman, the actual gunman, is not being put to death first. And I'm not saying it would make it any better. But again, I have questions about how we serve out justice. And I'm not exactly sure of when Kerry Spencer's execution date was. I saw some conflicting reports, so I didn't want to put out anything that wasn't factual. Nevertheless, I know that right now, currently, he is alive. And granted, he did his part. And he said multiple times on multiple occasions that he was not the gunman. He did not know what I was going to do. And that kind of brings me back to this accomplice law. I don't think that the state of Alabama executed this correctly. And when I say that, I'm talking about the accomplice law itself. I think that when it comes to being an accomplice in something, I feel like that takes knowing, that takes being aware. That should not apply to someone who genuinely did not know and was not aware of what was going to happen. And I think that's my biggest issue with this law. And I honestly think this law truly is a crock of shit, because it just doesn't make any sense. And I just don't see how it applies here. And I get how you can want to spin a narrative, but I think also when it comes to the law, there's the burden of proof. How can you prove that he knew what was going to happen? How can you prove that he intended to assist Kerry Spencer in killing these officers, especially when the actual gunman is stating that he did not know, he's not aware, and that I acted on my own volition? That's my only thing, the burden of proof. And I will say that the song lyrics that he wrote, the picture of the bullet-ridden police vehicle that he drew, not a good look. There's no way around that at all. And that could have played into burden of proof. I know they did use that in court against him. So again, not a good move. But the whole assuming an ambush and that it was done on purpose, I mean, my only questions is, did he know that they were coming to serve a warrant? Did they have a personal vendetta against these police officers? It seems very spontaneous. It seems the way someone would act when they don't want to get caught with something bigger. So they think irrationally and they make a split decision that ultimately leads to something like this. I just don't see where it also equals up to, oh, he intentionally set out to kill these officers and he used himself as bait so that he could kill these officers. That's the part that I feel like there is no proof of that. And I feel like Alabama, they don't have a great track record. You know, that one movie that just came out with Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx, Alabama. The book, The Sun Does Shine, a really great book, very sad book. And I read it. It's about this man who was literally on death row for a crime he did not commit and was literally about to be put to death, wrongfully convicted. Now, this situation, I'm not going to fully use the term wrongfully convicted, because he was present. He was there. The situation did happen. This is somebody that he knew. It's not like it was I didn't even do this and y'all are accusing me type of situation, like the two stories I mentioned. However, I do believe he was overly punished, and I do believe he was overly punished because he was a black man. I can't think of any other reason why he would be punished so severely when they literally have white supremacists in Alabama who have killed people that are not even facing death. And that's my whole hang up with the death penalty that I meant to get into earlier, and then I got sidetracked. But I don't know if I agree with the death penalty. However, going back to last week's episode, you know, with people like Gabriel Fernandez's parents and like the situations like that, I fully believe that the person should be put to death. I don't think there's any way around it. I don't think there's any way to get past that part. I truly believe that if you do something heinous like that to a child or something like that, you should be put to death. If you brutally murder somebody and your intention is, I want to inflict as much pain as possible, torture, things of that nature, then yes, you should be put to death. Situations like this, I don't know. Not when you're not the gunman. Like Kerry Spencer, to just brutally shoot people like that, that is insane. And as somebody who shot high-powered rifles before, that is nuts. That is really nuts. For that, I'm gonna lean towards it. However, for somebody who was just present, who was not the gunman, unless you can prove that this person intentionally set out to do that, I really do have an issue with this. I do. And I don't think there will ever be a time that I don't have an issue with that. That's just my thoughts on that. I really don't have too much else to add. I really want to hear from you guys. What are your thoughts on this case? How do you all feel about it? Do you believe in the death penalty? Let's have a full-on discussion about this. Let's discuss it on Twitter. Let's discuss it on Instagram. And also, what are your thoughts on this case? And just be completely honest. If you don't agree with me, you don't agree with me. That's fine. Let's discuss it, though, because I want to hear different opinions on this, because this is a sticky case. You know what I mean? And I just kind of want us to unpack that together as a cases of color community. So, like I always say, if you guys are not following me on Instagram or Twitter, what are you doing? Follow me on Instagram or Twitter, because that's where I love to have these conversations. As a reminder, if there are any cases in your area or just cases that you've stumbled across where there is little to no information, but the person is still missing or the person's been murdered and haven't come to a resolution, but there's not enough information for me to do a full episode on it, send it to me. I'm going to start doing honorable mentions at the very beginning of every single episode. It'll be about 2 to 3 minutes maximum, just talking about the case, putting out information on how to contact and get information out there and things of that nature. Also, you guys, as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for being patient with me. And as far as this coronavirus stuff, you guys, stay safe, stay clean, wash your hands, do not go in crowded places if you don't have to, and just try to have as many things as possible as you need for you and your family, whatever it's feasible for you to have. Once all this craziness dies down, I want to talk to you guys about Cases of Color merch. I think I want to make some t-shirts and things of that nature. Just other ways for you guys to support me until I get sponsors. So as always, have a good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or a good middle of the night.